Hello, and welcome back to the Make Yourself Magic podcast. You guys, today I want to start by making a confession. I lied the other day to the guy that wants to buy my car. It was just a little lie. I told him I had someone else interested in my car just for the motor. Taken as an amalgamation, it was true. There were a couple of other people interested in my car, and my building's doorman had told me about the high value of the motor in my car. But I still felt the heat of the reality that I had spoken an untruth come flaming up my neck and into my cheeks when the interested buyer in front of me asked, "Why?" "I don't know," I responded honestly, and the conversation moved on, but I felt bad about it for hours afterward. And I realized in the great scheme of things, it isn't a big deal, except that to me it is, because long ago I began to learn about the power of our words. Not only in the context of manifestation, although we'll get to that too, but also in the broader context of the energy of them, their impact in our lives and the world around us. As you may already be aware, sound is physical. The passage of energy waves through space, and it literally impacts that space, moving or even levitating objects. Did you know that? My mouth literally fell open when I learned that. There are scientists who believe that sound waves brought down the walls of Jericho, as described in the Bible, or at least helped to do so. We use sound waves to measure otherwise unobservable objects, and sound, or the lack thereof, dramatically impacts our minds, like our ability to focus and learn and even physically heal. And there are numerous studies reporting on the energetic impacts of that sound. One of my favorites is The Secret Language of Water, written by Masaru Emoto, in which he demonstrates that words have an impact on our physical world. Not only the impact of the sound waves generated by our words, but the actual words spoken. There are several visually stunning documentaries about it, which I found awe-inspiring, if you'd like to check them out. But the crux of the research is that the world around us is not only impacted by the sound vibrations of our words, but also the energy of our words. Quote unquote negative words like hate or anger or ugly literally change the crystal formation of water into something unpleasant to behold. While positive words like love, beauty, gratitude create stunning symmetrical crystals. And the experiments have been repeated over and over and over, but I don't need to get into all of that again. If you caught my last episode, you heard plenty about my feelings on it. Suffice to say, our words, specifically the energy of our words, have power, one that I personally think is often overlooked. Not just the power demonstrated by Mr. Emoto's work, but power to affect others, and on a bigger scale, power to affect our lives. Growing up in the Catholic Church, I was taught that lying was a terrible sin. White lies, however, were viewed as less abhorrent. Little lies, the kind that are told to spare someone's feelings, perhaps, or that are just standard practice in polite conversation. You know, like Pam tells Sally over the phone that she's on her way just as the waiter sets her plate in front of her at a restaurant. Probably not a big deal, although Pam may be covering something up, which would then render the lie not a little white lie, but a big black one? I don't know. Anyway, let's assume it is a white lie. But why lie? Perhaps Pam just wanted Sally to believe that she was further along in her process of arriving home than she really was. But again, why? Sally is going to be fully aware that Pam was not on her way home when it takes Pam 20 extra minutes to arrive there. And Pam can blame traffic or whatever, ultimately not a big deal, except that Sally may also have doubts about the truth of this, and it may make her wonder what Pam was really up to. I mean, little sidebar here. Of course, it isn't Pam's job to anticipate Sally's paranoia or insecurity or whatever and adjust herself accordingly. But just the reality that her white lie might seed that mistrust in Sally makes it that much more ridiculous to do it in the first place. If Pam had nothing to hide from Sally, why lie? Okay, perhaps it was important to Pam that Sally see her as responsible, someone who understands the value of Sally's time and wants Sally to believe that she is acting accordingly. But again, why? Because Pam's ego is so fragile that if Sally is bothered by Pam's tardiness, it will hurt beyond her tolerance? Or could it be because Pam knows she should honor and respect Sally's time, but didn't? And even if it isn't a big deal at all, wouldn't it serve to deepen and solidify trust in the relationship, no matter the kind of relationship, if Pam was just honest and vulnerable and told Sally the truth? Like, I was seized by a fish taco craving and compelled by my stomach to stop at Juan's Tacos, so I'm gonna be a little late. Even if Sally was upset, they could have discussed their real feelings about it instead of dodging the emotions and creating an environment of mistrust and misunderstanding between them. I know how this works, friends, because there was a time in my life when I was a serial liar. As a teenager and even a young adult, I lied all the time. For attention from boys, which is a massively important lesson I'll tell you about another time. But the point is, I lied all the time. To my parents about where I was or where I was going, to my band teacher about how much I'd practiced, to my boss about why I couldn't come in for work. And it didn't seem like a big deal. Everybody did it. Except that the more normal it seemed, the more I did it. And the bigger the lies became. At one point, I crafted a now cringeworthy tale of being discovered in a dumpster as a child because I wanted to have been adopted. I hope you're laughing. I'm genuinely still and tremendously embarrassed about that. If you're listening, Harry, I'm so, so sorry. Relax, guys. His name isn't Harry. But the truth is, even after a couple of years of, quote, practice, I was a terrible liar. I mean, it was terrible that I lied. But I was terrible at doing it. I couldn't remember what I'd said or to whom, which was obviously a huge problem. Plus, it felt ridiculous. I mean, I think if we're honest, we can feel it when someone is lying to us. And it feels like shit. That in and of itself should have been a reason enough for me to stop lying. Though I also firmly believe in the idea that we are not under any obligation to live our lives in a way that makes other people comfortable. We can live in a way that is respectful of others. Yes, please, yes, let's do that. In fact, I'd argue that one of the foundations of respecting others is speaking from our truth. But I'd like us to choose honesty for our own reasons. Because, as I learned in my early 20s from my first spiritual mentor in one of my first manifestation classes, there is a damn good reason. She pointed out that if we wanted to become master manifestors, if we wanted to be able to speak our desires into reality, we also had to be able to believe in our own word, fiercely, as law. Because yes, we can change our lives and our realities by changing our minds. And that begins with changing the way we think about and speak to ourselves about our realities and lives. But it only works if we believe what we're saying. If we're telling ourselves that we're wealthy, for example, but we're simultaneously thinking about the shoes we can't afford or the fact that our checking account is overdrawn or whatever, the energy that drives both the sound wave and the resultant change isn't there. Whoa. I'm telling you guys, it was almost like a light switch level change. I did a 180 in the way that I communicated, the way I approached communication in general with myself and the rest of the world. Which is why, even if the guy buying my car doesn't feel me lying to him, I know I lied. Even though it may only have been a little white lie, like a tiny little hail dent in the paint of my car, it can corrode my sense of self-integrity. One little dent might not be a big deal, but if you've got loads of those little dents all over the car, in a few years, it'll just be a rusty shell. A situation made markedly worse if those dents get bigger. Because once you start making it okay to tell the little white lies, it's hard to tell where they become big black ones. And it gets easier to lie in general, not to mention the fact that often one little lie leads to another and another, and pretty soon you have softball-sized hail raining down on your car. I realize I'm torturing that metaphor a little bit here, but stay with me. All that damage corrodes our credibility to anyone and everyone around us, even ourselves. And that, of course, sends all that energy of doubt and mistrust and loss of respect into our beliefs about ourselves and our lives. And that same energy subsequently pollutes our realities anytime the other person sends us energy in thought or deed. So the key to manifestation, I understood, was to make my word truth, gospel. So that when I told myself I was swimming in abundance, my deep soul, self, heart, brain could believe it. And it worked. I was manifesting more easily exactly what I wanted and needed in my life. And you know what's almost more exciting? I found it incredibly liberating to tell the truth all the time in so many other ways. Suddenly, I didn't have to worry about what I'd said before or to whom. I didn't have that flame of embarrassment crawling out my neck as I spoke untruths into the world. I didn't have to worry about whether or not they believed me. It didn't matter. I'd spoken honestly, And if the other person ever ran across the same information somewhere or from someone else, it was no threat to me. I didn't have to worry about whether one friend would mention something to another or whether my lie would be inadvertently exposed somehow. It was like the reverse of the ripples in a pool thing. I was ever more liberated and calmed by the truth. Perhaps the most empowering shift, though, for me, was the sense of fearlessness it gave me. Being the first to stand up and admit it when I'd done something wrong felt amazing. I could apologize genuinely and leave it in the past, instead of towing around my responsibility or worrying that the other person would find out I was responsible or knowing that they kind of had something on me. I could just go on and live my life. And if they were bothered by my action, it was no longer my business. I had made a mistake, taken ownership, asked for forgiveness with true remorse. There was nothing left for me to do. If they continued to judge me for my mistake or action, that was on them. It is such an empowering feeling that I've become a little addicted to it. By that, I mean I rush to speak my truth and take responsibility. Sometimes even when it isn't my fault or it isn't anything that needs to be said, and that's something I'm working on in myself. But I also realized that a part of the reason it felt so damn good to tell the truth all the time was related to the reasons I had been lying in the first place. I was spouting off all kinds of ridiculous stories about everything from where I had lunch to what kind of family I was raised in, because on some level, I was embarrassed about myself, about my choices, about who I was, where I came from, the way I perceived myself in the world, all of it, all the time. Which, of course, is one of the many realizations that set me on my personal spiritual path of self-love. But my shift to obsessive truth-telling also gave me a taste of what it would feel like to genuinely love being myself in front of other people. No matter what, I could make mistakes and still love myself. I could own the ways in which I was different to others or held different opinions and be proud of that, not shamed by it. I didn't have to invent stories about being a trash baby in order to win a deluded and distorted version of love through pity. I could love myself because I was no longer afraid of the truth in general, or the truth about myself to myself. Because the more I told the truth, the more I realized the many ways I'd been lying, the little white lies. In some cases, it wasn't even really consciously misleading someone. For instance, for much of my young life, I agreed with people even when I had no idea what they were talking about. Or, worse still, I agreed with them when I knew exactly what they were talking about, but my views were so dramatically different and I didn't want to incite a heated discussion, so I just went along with the conversation. Lies of omission. And then, when I made the shift, it felt so good to just say, "I'm sorry, I have no idea to what you were referring. Would you explain it to me?" And I didn't have to feel bad about it because I loved myself enough to know that I was intelligent. I didn't have to pretend to know everything because there's no way anyone can, and I know other things, and it's wonderful to learn something new. It felt less good, however, to say, "Actually, I completely disagree with you." In fact, I'm still kind of struggling with how to navigate those kinds of confrontational interactions in a way that both respects the other person and honors the validity of my own thoughts and beliefs. The best version I've gotten to so far is, "Actually, I understand that perspective, but I also understand and identify with the other one." But I digress. The point is, the more deeply I loved myself, loved being myself in the world, the more empowered I was by speaking from a place of honesty, always. And the more I did that, the more I felt myself opening fearlessly up to the world instead of hiding in my falsely created reality. I did, however, have to work on how to interact in polite conversation when I didn't want to tell the truth. Not all of it, anyway. Because often it isn't anyone else's business, or maybe I know enough about the person with whom I'm speaking to know that they aren't to be trusted with this kind of information. Or perhaps it just isn't something I want to give energy and attention to by speaking about it with others, whatever. Sometimes it simply isn't necessary or appropriate to tell just anyone absolutely everything. So I adapted. I learned to tell my truth, and just enough to be able to participate in polite conversation, because whether we like to admit it or not, truth is subjective. Just like our science, centuries ago, it was believed that bloodletting was a scientifically based cure for diseases, that the earth was the center of the universe, that disease itself came from falling out of favor with God or the gods. Those things were considered facts, but today we know differently because we know more. The same is true for our personal life experiences. When I spoke honestly at 25, I spoke honestly. I may have realized at 30 that I was wrong, but either way, I was honest. Even if hindsight shows me a different version of truth, I know that I spoke honestly at the onset, and that's the best any of us can do. In order then not to become the kind of person that left people crying in the grocery store parking lot after they asked me how I was doing and responding with something like, well, I'm absolutely devastated by the political climate and the silent war on women. I'm horrified by the hypocrisy demonstrated by Christians. I've been lonely for almost half a decade, and I'm still struggling to appreciate my body. I adapted. When asked, I'd say, I'm great, thank you. And in my mind, I would remind myself that I was picking up sushi from my favorite restaurant and was going to spend the rest of the evening on my couch watching my favorite show without fighting over the remote. Or if my personal life had totally hit the skids, I could say, I've been loving my work lately, which was true, and just leave out the part that I was waking up with swollen eyes every morning from crying. You get the point. And there's another little bonus to this selective truth-telling approach. In finding things to celebrate in my life in front of others, it puts the vibrational energy of that goodness and gratitude out into the universe. And in the mind of the other person, I'm doing well. So when they think or speak of me, they are thinking and saying and believing good things about my life, which adds to that positive energy. There's a caveat here though, of course, because I feel like we all need to be able to just let it out sometimes. And I have a couple of particularly sacred friends in my life with whom I share the real whole truth. Quick shout out, you know who you are, and I'd just like to remind you again that you are precious to me. Because I think we need to be sensitive to the fact that we're humans, and in order to have full, rich human experiences and to be able to connect with other humans about those experiences, we have to leave space for the less pleasant truths. And stop feeling like there's something wrong with that. But I also think we get to exercise complete autonomous discernment in sharing those experiences and associated emotions. So ultimately, I'm advocating for selective honesty shared at our personal discretion. Because our lives, choices, feelings, whatever are ours and ours alone, to share how and with whom we choose. And in all honesty, I think we can live happier, more empowered lives, not to mention enjoy better relationships founded on even deeper levels of trust, if we love being who we are and allow ourselves to just be honest. I hope you have a wonderful, empowered week, and please join us next week. Thanks for listening. If you liked this podcast, remember to subscribe and please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/Jacqueline Linnae. There, you'll get access to the personal stories of the random ways daily life inspires me and all of us to keep growing. And if you'd like to dig in and do some of your own healing through self-love, check out the workshops and personal support sessions available on my website at authorjacquelinelanae.com. That's JacquelineLanae.com. Have a wonderful week.